Hello and welcome everyone to episode 43 of what was the SVOPA podcast. As people know, we've changed our name now, so it's the St. Vincent's Past Pupils Association, SVPPN. And I'd like to welcome my co-host for the introduction today, of Joe. How are you doing, Joe?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Hi everyone, nice to be back. It's been ages, but it feels good.
It has. We've been talking about restarting the podcast, and I thought it'd be great just to have Joe on as the main host in the past to sort of tell a little bit about what she's been up to since the last podcast, and then we're going to introduce the team who are going to be working on it going forward. So what have you been up to, Joe?
Oh God, when did we do the last podcast? I cannot remember.
It's probably about 2020.
Oh, well, I've been in lockdown, but then haven't we all? I've changed jobs twice. I'm now working for the Macular Society as regional manager of the Southwest. So I cover Cornwall, Devon, Somerset and Bristol, which I'm absolutely loving. Still chairing VI Talk, which is going really well. Now 10 groups on Facebook, hoping to start some online dance classes, all sorts of things going on there. The team has changed slightly, but then doesn't it always? Quite fluid. And yeah, just lots of exciting stuff. I'm learning to be a gong player as well, Michael.
It's amazing what you've been doing. And we will have you on more often going forward with some of the, you know, especially with the VI Talk stuff. Some of it works across, doesn't it? Some of the stuff we do. So we will work closely if there's material what can be shared across. So we've got a couple of things coming up on this episode, but we're just going to introduce them as and when we start them. So what we're going to do, if you remember, we did the 2-minute challenges years ago with quite a lot of people, and we felt bringing back Danielle, Adrian, Paul Roberts, and Jane, who's not here today, we're going to get them to introduce themselves with a 2-minute challenge. So the idea of that is that they're going to get 2 minutes to talk about themselves, maybe school, what they've been doing, and when that 2 minutes is over, it's tough. That's all you're getting. So do you want to introduce the first one, Joe?
Yeah, so it's a pleasure to introduce Danielle to do the 2-minute challenge. No pressure, Danielle. Enjoy.
Thank you, I think.
And your time starts now.
Hi, everyone. So I'm Danielle. I went to school at St. Vincent's from 1996 to 2010. I've been a bit of a busy bee since I left. I went to college to study performing arts, went to university to study music and vocal teaching, did a bit of work after that, had 2 years that disappeared into nowhere through lockdown, didn't we all? And I'm now back at college again doing a new course in complementary therapies. I live in Liverpool now with my best friend Simon and our cat Jesper, who's he was a rescue cat. He's well, was very unfortunate, but he's now lives a life of luxury really and is spoilt. Yeah, and that's me in a nutshell.
Well, you've still got another minute, so you have to carry on.
Oh, my life. Okay. Oh, crikey me.
Hobbies?
Yeah. Say again?
Hobbies?
Yeah, so hobbies, I sing a lot. I love going to the theatre, seeing live performance, live music, arts, anything creative. I love getting out and about as well in kind of nature and walking and outside. Started going to the gym this sort of time last year, and I'm getting into that. That's a bit of me time, so yeah, working hard with that. And being generally creative, we've got a couple of different shows and creative things that Simon and I are working on together at the moment. He's a pianist and writes music, and hopefully we'll have some exciting things to tell you about them in the future because they link to school. So watch this space for news of upcoming things to get involved with. I literally cannot think of anything else.
Well done. It's not easy, is it? 2 minutes is ages. You don't think it is, but it absolutely is. Okie dokie. So next on the hot seat is going to be Mr. Paul Roberts.
Oh, right. Hello, everyone. My name is Paul Roberts. I attended St. Vincent's from September 1983 and left in July 1987. After I left St. Vincent's, I went to Queen Alexandra College in Birmingham from September 87 to July 90. And during my final year at the college, I was on the telephony reception and information processing course. And after leaving college, I applied for switchboard work and got the job at the, wait for it, Inland Revenue. And worked in various offices, Chester, Birkenhead, Liverpool. I'm currently in Liverpool now, but the organisation that was once the Inland Revenue, having merged with Customs and Excise in 2005, is now known as HM Revenue and Customs. After the switchboards were phased out, I did a variety of taxes-based work, and I currently work in a unit known as Debt Management. And some of it's interesting, and I work with some great people, some of whom I still haven't met yet because of lockdown, but it's okay. Away from work, I have a number of hobbies and interests. I'm a massive fan of music, which ranges from classical at one end to rock at the other. But I particularly like house music and soul. And I love instrumental music. I have a huge passion for that. I also attend a number of soul and house music events throughout the year. I'm a massive radio fan. These days, it's internet radio that does it for me. And I also enjoy other bits of radio. I enjoy going to a folk club on a Wednesday night and occasionally host a night when there's a guest night, which is always fun. And, of course, I enjoy the meetups that we have with our St. Vincent's crowd and also other meetups and other things that I do as well. How's that?
Still got a bit more. 10 seconds.
10 seconds. In that 10 seconds, I'd just like to say that actually I'm enjoying life generally. With all the things that I do, it's going well.
Well done, Paul. Well done. Yeah, well done. It's not easy. It isn't. I remember when I did it years ago when we were at the Clifton, and it was just hilarious because you think you're going to take forever and you just don't.
That's it. It's dead long. I mean, talking of the Clifton and other things, we are looking at doing another weekend break at some point during 2023. So just watch this space is what we'll say.
Okay, so lastly, but by no means least, we've got Adrian who's going to be on the hot seat. So good luck, Adrian.
Thank you, Joe. Hello. And I have to say, first of all, before I start, that I had been considering taking up gong playing myself. And then I thought, yeah, I'll give it a bash.
Oh.
Hello, well, my name's Adrian Picton, and I was at Exall Grange before I came to St. Vincent's, and I was quite unhappy there. And then I was also starting to lose my sight, and fortunately, an opportunity came up to move to St. Vincent's because I lived in Chester, and it was a lot nearer. It meant I could go home every weekend. And I found St. Vincent's a really homely and welcoming place after Exall. It just seemed a lot more homely, kind of friendly kind of place. And I ended up doing 4 years there, 75 to 79. I did an extra year because I was learning Braille as I was losing my sight. I left in 79, went to RNC, had 3 great years there. And then I was at home in Chester for 3 years, but I went to a local FE college and did some voluntary work as well, including my local talking newspaper and visiting people in an older person's home. And then I went to university in Nottingham. My dad got a job in Nottingham, and at that time I had a girlfriend there as well, so it seemed a great idea. And I did a social policy administration degree. After that, I worked as an unqualified social worker for about 9 months. And then I got back on the MA in social work course and did that for 2 years back at Nottingham University. And then I was working as a social worker from then in Nottingham up until December 2019, when I took early retirement. Glad I did now, because it was all the lockdown and stuff happened since then. I ended up moving up here to the northeast. I was married in 2011, but sadly I lost my first wife in 2016, and I married again in 2020, sort of during lockdown, but we were lucky enough to have a wedding where we could have 30 people. There was a window when it was still 30 people, and so Sue's my wife now, and we live up here in Northumberland. And like Paul, I like radio. I thought I knew I'd run out of time because I just waffle. I mean, you've no trouble getting me to talk.
No, some great things in there. And I know, like, Paul's done things on the old podcasts, and you're on this one anyway, talking about the school reunion as well, Adrian, which is going to be good. And so, no, thank you. And we will get Jane on at a later date to do that challenge as well.
Yeah,
I think you know me enough, so I'm going to get away with it for this time. Right, well, we just want to say thank you to Paul, Adrian and Danielle for doing the 2-minute challenge.
And if you're up for the challenge, then please get in touch. And we'd love to have you on the podcast and hear your 2 minutes of history, whether that's school or just your life in general.
So, yeah, get in touch. We'll give the contact details at the end. And we look forward to hearing you again. So on with the podcast. So we're going to move on to talk about the reunion this year, which took place in July. And I've brought together Julie and Adrian to talk about this. So hi, Adrian.
Hi, Michael.
And hi, Julie.
Hello, Michael.
Right, I'm going to start with you first, Julie, and because this is really the first time you've been back to the school pretty much since you left, bar one reunion.
Yeah.
Should we start by just saying, how did you feel first about coming back to the school after such a long time?
Well, it's been on my bucket list for quite a long time. And when I actually approached the school, I got very, very emotional. You know, when we pulled outside the school front there, I actually had tears in my eyes. And I don't know why, because my time at school was, well, the first year was horrible. The rest of it was okay. And the last year was horrible. So, you know, I have to say that it was quite emotional, and I was surprised at how small it all looked.
When were you roughly at school, and what have you done since?
I was at school from 1964, and I left in 1972, and then I went to the Royal National College for the blind in Shrewsbury, and I was there until 1975. I had a ball at college; I loved it. And then I started work in Sheffield for Freeman's Catalogue, would you believe? That was my first job. And then I left that job and was unemployed for about 10 months and got a job with the Inland Revenue, as it was then, and it is now HMRC. And I continued my career with them until I retired in 2016.
Right, so you've had a good career really throughout the years. And it's surprising how many people have worked for HMRC. There's quite a few from the school.
Lots of visually impaired and lots of other disabled people work for that organisation, which I think is a good thing. But they're trying to lead by example, I think.
That is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Adrian, I'm just going to move over to you a second. It's technically your first reunion in the school since about 1987, I think you said. How did you feel about going back into the school? Because you came last year when it was the pandemic or just before the pandemic.
This was my first time back since 1987, when I went to my first reunion, which was, I left in 79, so that was 8 years after I left, and not a lot had changed then. But this was, you know, the first time I'd been in years, so it was quite a funny feeling. You sort of notice things straight away, like the drive is now tarmac, it used to be gravel, and you walk in the front entrance, and then the main corridor is all carpeted, and the corridor that goes down towards the chapel has got a different floor. Had a good walk around the school, good tour around it, thanks to Diane McCulley, as she was, Diane Waits, as she is now, who, as you know, works at the school. She was a contemporary of mine, actually, so it was lovely to see her as well, and to see one or two other people that I knew, as well as people that were there at different times to when I was there.
So I can remember when I first went back in 2008, I think I went back after 20 years, and I was just like you, you know, you're walking in, I think I had a few minutes because we stayed over, I was in my room, and it's sort of the emotion of coming back and thinking, wow, it's not changed, but it has. So what were your sort of first impressions when you walked in, and Julie?
It was so much nicer than when I was there. We didn't have carpets on the floor, that's for sure. The entrance hall where we came in the front door, that was all carpeted and looked very nice with the desks. It looked very professional with a computer there. And I remembered as soon as I walked in there, I knew where everything was. So I did have a tour around the school, and there were certain places that we weren't allowed to go in, the doors were locked, but you know, in the main, I had a really good look around, and had quite a lot of memories, you know, sort of some good and some bad. And I was particularly sad about, we called it the Queen's Wing when I was there. It's where the senior girls slept upstairs. You know, it's the yellow corridor up just before the chapel. It's called something else now. I can't remember the name of it. And we went upstairs, and it felt very, very abandoned. And I thought that was really sad. But I also thought that the quality of the furniture in the rooms, and the room where everybody, like the sort of, what do you call it? You like the main room where people congregated together. It was beautifully equipped with a fantastic kitchen. And I thought it was really, really lovely. And then we used to have, in the bedrooms, we used to be able to walk through to the next room, but they were blocked off. So it was completely private from the other rooms. Well, I did enjoy going there, because that was in my senior years, and I very much enjoyed my last few years, apart from the year when I left, which was because, this is ridiculous, but it was because all my friends at home left school at 15 and I had to stay until I was 16, and I really resented that. Silly, but that's how it was.
Well, at the time, that's how you feel, isn't it? If you get absolutely your friends at home and like, why are they doing this when we're doing that? So yeah. I know I stayed up in because it was Keller, isn't it, above the Queen's Wing. I think it is still known as Queen's Wing, but I'm not sure. But I stayed in there about 6 years ago. And yeah, it's not really in the used area, but I know they were looking to reuse it again at some point.
Looks very abandoned, Michael. You know,
it does.
I thought that was quite sad, but I do realise they haven't got as many pupils as they used to have.
That's it. They've not got half. They've only got, I'm going to say about 48, it might be a few more, might be a few less, and a few left this year and a few more started. So when you were walking around the school, Adrian, what sort of areas did you find similar or change or brought back your memories?
Well, as I mentioned about coming down the corridor, the chapel, I didn't really look in properly, but... What it did do with the chapel as part of the tour is, when Diane was showing us around, she took us on the first floor level, and there's like a gallery that runs along the top of the chapel. I never even knew that was there, never been in it before. So that was quite exciting. I mean, Queen's Wing, it looked pretty much the same as when I was there, the yellow floor and everything. Some of the classrooms were open. You had these blue blinds, which made this really weird blue light in the rooms that were open. Upstairs was senior girls when I was there. I didn't go upstairs, but it was when I was there, it was seniors. So I had my first year, might have been the first 2 years in Queen's Wing, and then they swapped the seniors and juniors round. So I moved to King's Wing for my latter years there. So as Jules said, some of the rooms were locked. I was disappointed I couldn't go in the youth club. That was all locked up. Apparently it's got gym equipment in it now. But what was the gym is kind of like disused, not being used anymore. The assembly hall was still there, but it didn't seem quite the same, and they changed it to a laminate flooring, had that lovely old wooden floor. But I was able to go upstairs to, when I was there, there's a room that became, it was the boys, Mr. Connolly's senior boys dormitory when I was there. And that's the room I was in my first year. That became the library after I left. It had a lovely parquet floor. And the room beyond it, I was there in my second year, which had the showers and wash bases in between, and then the house father's flat. That became it became Mr. McFarlane's room. He taught us English in there for a while, and then it became domestic science room, which it still is to this day. It's got all fancy new equipment in there. Down below in King's Wing, we looked in some of the classrooms. They look pretty much like they always did, but lots of different things on the walls. When went down that slope down to by where the art room is, that was floor, had that bobbly floor, that's all changed. And had the green walls, and that's all different. Then it had various sculptures on the walls. Somebody was mentioning about there was a telephone. A lot of those things had gone. where you would turn left to go down towards the music block, down that mobility corridor that had the wooden planks you could tap your cane on. That's all fenced off now, and apparently it's used by a private day nursery.
It is. It's a nursery at that end now, which is not directly connected to the school, but if they ever get any visually impaired children or anything like that, there will obviously be direct links where they can work together, which is brilliant. And it's additional money for the school, isn't it?
And also while we were there, they opened up one of the rooms upstairs that was the junior, I think it was junior boys' dormitories, which I hadn't really been in before because I was there. I came there as a senior. They put laid out loads of information, which I'm sure you'll be able to describe, Michael, of sort of yearbooks and photographs and things like that. But there were also a few artifacts from our days at school, like the big gong that was the nuns used when it was time for various things. The dentist chair that we had in Sister Rita's pharmacy. It was quite funny to see that. And a few other things. And Diane did a great job of touring us around the school. She took us at the Caulfield end, which I'd never been to when I was there, because that was infants when I was there. And they've got all like play areas and all sorts of things up there. And it was just very, very interesting to talk to Diane about, you know, what's happening now and see how it changed. And, well, the afternoon went so quickly, really. But we did, when we arrived, there was tea and coffee laid on in a room adjacent to what was the typing room when I was there. We then had the AGM in the room next to that.
That used to be the juniors' playroom when I was there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where we all had little lockers where we could put our things and we watched the TV and had things. You know, it was a big room to play in. I was surprised at how much nicer it was than when I was there.
Yeah, it was all carpeted. And did you notice the, I assume the typing room was the same when you were there, but there was that, do you remember there was that little kind of alcove as you went in where the phone was, the coin box? I don't know if that was there when.
I don't think so, because we didn't have typing rooms. We had desks that had typewriters in them. We used to pull them up. They were fantastic, these desks. You know, they were school desks, and if you lifted up the lid and you pulled your typewriter out, and that's when you had your typing lessons.
Also during the tour, we went upstairs above the front door to the what was, I think it was junior girls' dormitories. I'd never been in there before. So that was quite a big area. You probably know it, Jules.
I didn't go up, but that's I actually, when I pulled up on the drive, as you say, it was tarmac rather than the stones. I could see the bedroom window that I used to look out of onto the drive.
Oh,
you know, when
that was
we nice. Have to go to bed at 7 o'clock and it was still light outside and there was no curtains on the windows.
Oh, really?
And we weren't allowed to talk. You know, it was quite strict in my day.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Than that.
I'm going to move on to the evening in a few minutes, but is there any more memories you had, Julie?
I was shocked at how small the girls' playground was as I knew it. They used to have like a witch's umbrella and a rocking horse, and there were swings. They'd all gone, and there was a new building in the corner, which I didn't know about. And I just thought how much it had changed, you know. And going down to the gym, I was saddened to see that it was no longer in use. Because it was a fabulous gym, you know. It still had all the equipment shoved in a corner, and I thought, what a shame. But then, of course, things have moved on, and people go on running machines and rowing machines, and I suppose that's progress. But I found that quite sad that the gym was kind of abandoned, and the old assembly hall, like Adrian said, that we used to have our assemblies in the morning there, and we used to put productions on the stage.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Oh, I used to. I was in quite a few of those, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and I just thought it was just this room with like a kickboxing thing, and there was a big drum, and there were just bits, random pieces all over it. And I thought, what a shame, because this hall had so many memories for me. And you mentioned the floor, that beautiful wooden floor they had. It was beautiful. I can't remember that they used to sort of polish it every day, and it was just this laminate flooring. And I thought, well. That's progress for you, you know.
I thought exactly the same.
I felt sad about that, Adrian. I did, yeah, yeah.
I think to give some context to people as well, as far as I'm aware, and I may be wrong, I think the gym does still get used, the old what we used as a gym. Yeah. Probably not as much. And the hall where we used to always have assemblies, now they tend to use the chapel as the main place for everything, for assemblies and for anything like that. So the chapel is used a lot more as the general place to come, where we always used the assembly hall, didn't we, at that time. So,
well, I'm glad about that, Michael, because I thought I thought it looked very abandoned, the chapel, because it was a beautiful little chapel. And of course, it's been deconsecrated since, you know, but I did like the chapel.
Yeah, it's the centre of everything, pretty much.
One of the funny things was I was with Tracy Manson McGuinness. We were having a little walk around with Catherine McHale and her sister Angie, and we were in the box. I said, oh, look, there's a confession box. So I went into it, and there was Tracy Manson. I'm saying, do you want to hear my confession, Tracy? It was quite a funny moment, really,
Yeah, so afterwards, we went over to Bradbury Fields for food and a bit of time over there. Do you want to just give a quick rundown on what happened there, Adrian?
Yes, well, first of all, our Danielle, who's very organised, she laid on taxis and things for us to get there, which was great. And we all sat around in different tables and had a chat. We had a meal, which I think it was pie and chips, or what was the other thing, Michael? Pie and chips, or was it fish and chips? I can't remember. There were two choices. Anyway, I think there was, it was a gatto, I think. Gatto or fruit salad or something like that. And it was nice to see Donna again, who I'd met before. So, and she actually knew me when I was in Nottingham. She worked actually in Nottingham, where social services like I did. But I did actually, yes, when you were referring to before the pandemic, Michael, you're right. I came to Bradbury Fields for that reunion. Was that 2 years ago or three now? I'm losing track.
2020, world stopped.
Just before the world stopped, that's right. Yes, it was. Mm. So we didn't get into the school because the school was already sort of closing itself down to outside visitors because they were worried about the virus. So we had the whole thing at Bradbury Fields last time. So that's why it was the first time back at school this time. But Bradbury Fields this time, yes, we had a pop quiz from Mark Fielding, who's on Ultimate Radio. He did a really good pop quiz. They were quite hard questions. And we had the two experts. I used to think I was an expert, not a bit of it, I'll tell you. We had Paul Roberts on our table, and then there was Sean Gilligan on the other table, and Sean won. Sean is absolutely, I mean, Paul's brilliant, but Sean, he just knows so much.
He does.
So his table won, but we got the second prize on our table. I think there was at least one more table, wasn't there, Michael?
I think there was about four teams, four teams.
But there was a good atmosphere. Everybody was enjoying themselves, drinking. There was a bit of music on in the background. What can I say? Everybody had a thoroughly good time. And us committee members stayed at the cottage, which I another place I'd never been in before, actually. But that was very nice. And we had pizza on the first night, on the Friday night, we got there. And didn't we, Michael? And on the Sunday, we had a leisurely start, a nice breakfast. And
Shout out to Adele and Gemma and a few of the others. But mainly Adele on the breakfast, the Irish breakfast.
They did a brilliant breakfast. And then we had to, because the cottage, we could only stay 2 nights, we stayed in a travel lodge on the last night.
Just as we finish, I'd like to ask you, Julia, because it's, you know, what would you say to anyone next time or in coming years to any of the events or especially the reunion about coming? What would you say?
It was a fantastic experience. I'm glad I did it. But yeah, it was brilliant. It was really nice. I saw Carolyn Fearon. She's called Carolyn Moore now.
Yeah.
I knew her at school and she hasn't changed a bit. She hasn't aged a bit. It's fantastic to see her. You know, and of course, I know Catherine McHale and Angie McHale. I've known them for years because they live in Rochdale like I do. So I was with them most of the time. And it was nice to see people. Pat Graham, I remember her very well. You know, I was having a little chat with her. And it was a bit strange seeing people grown up. But what struck me is walking up and down the corridors, was how little they were. Because when I was a kid, I couldn't even reach the windowsills, and they seemed to go on forever and ever and ever. But they weren't actually that long. I found that quite strange. And so talking about the gong, Adrian, I did see that in the archive. And, of course, I managed to find the banger for it, because I always wanted to bang that gong. And I didn't.
Oh, it was you that banged the gong.
Well, I did it while I was there, but I always wanted to do it, but I was so scared to do it because there was nowhere to hide. You couldn't run away quick enough because somebody would come out and spot who it was. So I fulfilled that ambition, which was great fun, I have to say.
Well, the thing I did a bit like that, Jules, was you know, the bell, the school bell, it was just like a doorbell going ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. But it was a switch on the wall opposite the secretary's office. Well, one day in prep, there was nobody about, and I walked past it and switched it on off really quick. So it just went ding dong. I was very pleased with myself for doing that.
Did you get caught?
No.
I'm guessing from this thing, you both say to anyone, if you can, next time or in the future, come along and join us.
Absolutely. It was a great experience to go back, and I really would urge anybody that hasn't been for, when it's been years for me, and I thoroughly enjoyed the trip, and hopefully if I go again, I could see some bits of, if whoever takes us round's got the keys, some bits that we didn't get to see last time.
It was great fun to see how the school has progressed.
Definitely.
It's changed completely, and it's nice to see that it's moved on. I think we should at least try it once, you know, because it's, you know, time's running out for people like me. I'm in my 60s now, you know, and I'm really glad I did it. I'm glad I went back.
It's been great talking to you and getting them insights from you guys as well. And as you said to me, it's partly, it's good to go back, good to see the place, but more important, it's good to meet new people. I've made some amazing friends and caught up with old friends as well over the years. So, you know, try and come along next year or whenever we hold future events. So thank you very much, the pair of you.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
So I'm here to share my story, and my story starts in Preston on my way to university. But who am I? Well, my name's Mohammed Salim Patel, and I had a dream. My dream was to work in television. It was actually to be a TV presenter. And my story is about how one woman didn't believe that I could do it. So there I am. I'm walking to university. I've got these big university buildings on one side, thousands of students on the other side. And I actually felt really small because of all these big buildings around me and all these people that were surrounding me. I was there to speak to lecturers about me wanting to study broadcast journalism. But I'm blind, so I can only see colours and shapes, and they wanted to talk to me about the course. So I had my new shoes on, a smart shirt, and I walked into this big building. It was so big, actually, that you could hear all the echoes when every time someone was speaking. We met a woman at reception and walked into this room. It had a round table. I was quite nervous, but feeling confident. I sat down and they started asking me questions. And the first question was, well, why do you want to study broadcast journalism? So I explained, I love telling stories and I've always enjoyed watching television, watching news, and I'd love to be a part of that. And then the lady that was in charge of the broadcast journalism course, she asked me, she said, so how much can you actually see? And I explained to her, look, I've got a degenerative eye condition, which means that as I got older, my vision got worse, and now I can only just see colours and outlines of shapes. But when I was younger, I could see much better, and I remember what television looks like and how things work. Then there's this silence. Now remember, I can't see. So I don't know, has everybody left the room? Are they talking to each other? What's actually going on? And then the lady that asked me the question, she spoke up and she said, I'm sorry, but I don't think you can do my course. It's going to be too visual for you and too demanding. My heart sunk. I'd slumped down in my chair and I was really sad. And I was thinking to myself, is that it now? Is that my dream over? I can't do what I wanted to do. Didn't know what to say. And then another lady spoke and she said, but you can study international journalism instead. That's not got any broadcast elements. So I just said, yeah, that's fine. I'll study international journalism. Now, I walked into this building feeling confident, but I walked out feeling really sad and I didn't know what to do. And remember how at the start I said I had a dream to work in television? Well, I still had that dream at that point, but my dream had changed. It was to prove that woman wrong. She didn't know me. She'd only met me for 20 minutes. She didn't know what I was capable of. So I wanted to prove her wrong. I studied international journalism. I had no choice. But I worked really hard. I got the best marks in all of my assignments. And when I came to my final year at university, I was in that same building with all those echoes. And that lady that said I couldn't study her course, she approached me. And she said, I hear you've been doing really well. You've been getting great marks and I'd love to help you. And I was a bit surprised. This is a woman that didn't allow me on her course, now offering me her help. But it's because I was working really hard and I needed to get employment. So she was introducing me to people at the BBC and that's exactly what I needed. So I accepted the help and she introduced me to people at BBC local radio, and that actually allowed me to get my first job as a local radio reporter in BBC Radio Lancashire. Whilst I was there, there was a scheme open at the BBC where they train you to be a multi-platform journalist. So they teach you how to write news articles for the website, how to work in radio, and also how to work in television. And all the training went really well until it came to the TV bit. You know, I didn't have confidence, I didn't know what to do because that woman had taken it out of me. And I explained what happened to the lady that was looking after the training course, and she said, look, we can find a way to make it work. And we did. When I do reporting, the cameraman claps at the lens so I know which direction to look at. When we do editing, I get someone to help me. And there's ways that we've managed to work things through. Whilst I was on the training scheme, there's a programme called Northwest Tonight that I got placed at for 6 weeks. And it's the regional TV news programme for the whole of the Northwest. And I really enjoyed my time there. It was great because, you know, I was doing reports, I was working in live television, and it was what I always wanted to do. And I ended up getting a job there. So I work there now as their planning producer. So I sit every day and I plan the next day's news programme. So I arrange all the stories, arrange all the interviews, find the stories, and then brief the reporters and presenters. I also work as a reporter for them, and that's given me great opportunities to meet so many different and interesting people. I've met Tyson Fury, Callum Smith, Natasha Jonas, so many good people, and that's all because of my job. And that's all because I didn't let that woman who said to me I couldn't do something actually make that become a reality. Because only I knew what I could do. Only I knew what I was capable of doing, and I didn't let her stop me. And you guys should never let anyone stop you either. You know, only you know what you're capable of doing. And sometimes you might come across people in life that don't have the belief in you that you have in yourself. But never let anyone take that belief away from you, because you can get the career that you want. And it could be anything. You don't have to go into journalism, but there's so many jobs out there and only you know what you're capable of. You don't have to have a disability either. Everyone's got strengths, everyone's got weaknesses, but we can all achieve what we want to do. And I did that. You know, I have a motto that I might be blind, but I have a vision, and I wanted to share that vision to that woman and to every one of you here today. So my story started in Preston. It finished with making my dream come true, and I've shared that with you here today.
Okay, huge round of applause for the man. And again, thank you so much for listening so politely and respectfully. It genuinely means a lot to us. So just like before, you've got the opportunity now to ask whatever questions you want. So stick your hand up, the football will come to you. And just like before, it would be great to know your name as well.
Hi.
Hiya. Hiya.
What did your parents do to help you? I don't have any.
You'll have people that look after you, Mark, and that's what my parents did for me. They just gave me belief and confidence. They said, look, you can do whatever you want to do, and they never stopped me. You know, they knew that I couldn't see, they knew that I'd find things difficult, but they gave me the belief to do whatever I wanted to do. And if I had a hard day or I struggled with something, they'd just talk to me about it, they'd give me the support I needed, and that allowed me to always be confident and always push forward.
Great question.
Hello, my name's Louis Blue, and did you ever want to give up on your dream?
I never did, and that's why I made it come true, because even though there were people that didn't think I could make my own dream come true, you know, I wanted to make that happen. So that gave me the motivation and the confidence to just keep pushing forward and keep breaking down those walls and, you know, make my dream come true. Sometimes it gets frustrating. Sometimes you think, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. But you've just got to swerve past that and just carry on walking forward, and you'll get to where you want to get to in the end.
Another excellent question. Thank you. Please keep them coming. I can see a hand up in the middle on this side. Going with the pass the parcel situation with the football. Hiya.
My name's Jaden. Do you have like a guide dog to help you get around?
So I'm actually scared of dogs. So that's not good for me to have a guide dog. But I have a support worker and they help me kind of get around, and I use a white cane as well. So I was born with a condition that meant that as I get older, my sight would get worse. For different people with the condition, sometimes, you know, it happens very late on in life. Sometimes it happens really early. But for me, my sight got worse when I was in my teenagers.
Thank you for all of these questions. Got time for one more question, so please make it a belter.
I think sometimes when people say something to you, and obviously they're, you know, older than you, or they've got like a powerful position or a job, then sometimes you kind of think maybe they're right. But when you've got a dream, or, you know, when you really want to do something, there's something inside you that says to you, nah, they're wrong. And, you know, it's your job then to kind of, you know, not ignore them, but just maybe prove them wrong in the same way that I did. And, you know, that very lady came and helped me.
I think, honestly, if Muhammad could bottle his determination and sell it, then he would be a multimillionaire. It's so impressive. Thank you so much for all of your questions. They were really excellent.
Thank you for tuning in to episode 43 of the SVPPA podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. We want to give a special shout out to Joe from VI Talk for helping us with the introduction. You can find out more about VI Talk by searching VI Talk on all the social media networks. We also want to thank Adrian, Danielle and Paul for taking part in the 2-minute challenges, and also Adrian and Julie for sharing their insights about the 2022 school reunion. Furthermore, we'd like to extend our gratitude to Salim Patel for providing us with the talk he gave from BBC's Share Your Story Tour, which was part of the centenary celebrations where journalists inspired children to pursue careers at the BBC. Looking ahead, we have some exciting events to announce. On the 13th of May, we are hoping to hold a Leeds meetup at the Station Hotel at Crossgates, starting at 1:30. And don't forget, this year's reunion will be taking place at the school on the 8th of July, with an evening event at Bradbury Fields. Booking will start soon, so keep an eye out for that. We would very much like you to join us in future podcasts with your stories, two-minute challenges, and any ideas. To stay up to date with all the news and events from SVPPA, search SVPPA on Facebook and Twitter. You can contact me, Michael Allen, on Messenger, or contact the SVPPA email, which is svppa2022@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you soon.